This is the Employment Law Show.
You betcha. We're here, and so are you. It's a good time to be around us Thursday evening. How are you? John Scholes here. Stan Fainsleberg is doing all the heavy lifting tonight, courtesy Samfiru Tamarkin, LLP. I'll tell you right off the top how you get a hold of Stan when the show's not on. And that would be 1-855-821-5900, help@employmentlawyer.ca. help@employmentlawyer.ca. Might get some of those emails today. In fact, tonight, that's what we're going to concentrate on. We'll get to it. By the way, any other concerns you have, you can go to the website, pocketemploymentlawyer.ca. There's information to be had there, plus access to that severance calculator, which does what it's told, and that is accurately calculate your severance in about 30 seconds or so. You just put in some basic information, nothing personal, and you'll get the number at the bottom, which will surprise you, but it is pretty close to being exactly true. So, again, give that a spin at pocketemploymentlawyer.ca, but I digress, brother. Thought of the day, case of the day. What do you got going on, Stan?
Hey, John. Good to be on the radio with you.
Yeah, man.
And so in terms of the thought of the day, I want to talk about a case dealing with the concept that I don't think our listeners, or certainly not something that we talk about often. I know that a lot of our listeners are obviously familiar, John, with the idea of cause, the terminating somebody for doing something so egregious that you don't owe them any money. And we've already talked to death about how high a standard cause is. But one concept that often gets overlooked when talking about cause is the idea of, well, what happens if you discover something after the employee's already left? And they're something they did at the time that you weren't aware of, but had you been, you would have probably fired that person for cause. And so that's the case that I want to talk about today and the concept I want to talk about today. Again, the concept of after-acquired cause. Because it's an absolutely legitimate defense that companies use all the time. So in this case, John, we're talking about a bank, an employee who got let go from a bank. You know, at the time, it was without cause, nothing suspicious, just a restructuring. And they couldn't agree to a severance package. And when that happens, you know, a lawsuit happens very shortly thereafter. And as part of the lawsuit, one of the fundamental steps to any lawsuit is this idea, or the step called examinations. The idea that, you know, one party gets an opportunity to sit the other party down and ask them, you know, questions for a certain period of time that are relevant to the lawsuit. Right. And in this case, John, as the bank's lawyers were questioning the plaintiff in this case, it came out that the plaintiff, for really no particularly good reason, had copied thousands of confidential documents onto a USB and taken them home. Now, like I said, there wasn't a great reason why she did this. It was kind of, she was very angry at the bank because they had refused to do something else, and she was kind of using this as an insurance policy, took it home, never did anything with the information, to be clear, but obviously a huge breach of trust and, you know, huge privacy concerns when you're talking about this type of information from a bank. And because the type of information we're talking about here is very sensitive, includes things like personal addresses, phone numbers, even SIN numbers, things that some, you know, if they fell into the wrong hands, could easily be used for the purposes of fraud. And so once the company realized what this employee had done, they then turned around and said to the, changed their defense to say, had we known about this at the time, we would have fired you for cause, and we are now going to allege after acquired cause. And, you know, as bad as this situation sounds on paper, John, despite the sensitive nature, despite the fact that this was a bank, highly regulated, you know, industry, even that did not amount to cause to fire this, what was of actually a very long-term employee. And there were a couple of reasons that the court kind of highlighted as to why this was the case. First of all, as I said, this person didn't do anything with the information. Literally just sat on a USB in her home office, never accessed again. Number two, this was a person who had never previously breached the code of conduct, never had any discipline issues, and had been there for 23 years. Again, these are all mitigating factors that the bank will look at to when they're determining cause. And really what the bank said, or sorry, the court said, was that this was a lapse of judgment. And they also took into account that the plaintiff in this instance was actually having a lot of personal issues that year, and that affected her judgment as well. I think she was going through a divorce, you know, so it's all contextual. When we talk about employment law, you know, there is obviously the law, but so much more importantly than the law, there are the people and the facts. You know, facts make cases. And here, all of it gets thrown into this, you know, hypothetical pot. And despite the serious transgression, I think everyone would understand that that's something that's just a very egregious conduct that you cannot do. Mm-hmm. Despite that, all of the other things outweighed that one lapse of judgment, and it was still not enough to say that this employee should be disentitled from all her severance.
Let me ask you this. Is there not with this particular case, but in general, is there is it time sensitive? How much time does a former employer have to go back and claim that? A year, 2 years, 2 weeks? Like how long after can they pull that card?
It's so in this context, it comes down to when do they find out?
Okay.
Because if they find out and do nothing, and there's no clear, I'd say it's fact specific how long that nothing period is. Sometimes it could be 1 month, sometimes it could be longer if there's rational reasons why it took longer. But if they do nothing, in legal terms, that's called condemnation. You've essentially said through your actions that whatever this employee did not amount to cause, because we did not fire that employee for cause. So in this instance, if they had found out and didn't amend their defense for a period of time, as the employee's lawyer, I would argue that they knew and they are now out of time. They've condoned or what this employee did and essentially said it doesn't amount to cause.
Ryan, let's get to Ryan. First email of the show tonight. Stan says, guys, it was told in December that the company made bonus and we would be paid our usual bonus this month in March. However, I was just let go and they're refusing to pay me that bonus. Do they have to give me the bonus if I work the entire year for the company? It's a good question.
Just like so much of employment law, the first thing we have to look at, John, is what do the contracts say? Is there a contract and what does it say? Or if there is no contract, is there a bonus plan policy and what does it say? Because something like bonus, and even something like bonus that Ryan ostensibly has earned by working the entire year, if a contract or a bonus plan has language that says, you know, you don't earn the bonus until the day of payout and you have to be actively employed on the date of payout to get it, and, you know, active employment is not considered any period of time outside of your statutory notice period, that kind of language is enough to say, well, Ryan doesn't get his 2023 bonus. If there is no such language like that, then there's no question. I mean, his notice period, it's already March 4th. If, you know, as long as his notice period is at least 4 weeks, he's going to get that bonus because the payout date will happen within his notice period. And as long as the payout date happens within the notice period, and remember, what's key here is that during the notice period, you are still an employee. You may not be actively employed, but you are nominally employed. And because you are still an employee, you are still entitled to whatever benefits an employee would have if you were still working there. Because in this situation, the Supreme Court said this basically explicitly, the only reason that Ryan isn't actively employed is the company won't let him work.
Right.
If they gave him working notice, he would have gotten it. So they shouldn't be allowed to just disentitle him, you know, barring a contract that he already agreed to and signed prior to the termination, just by taking away his ability to earn the bonus by working it.
So if you're dealing with a client in this regard, in the absence of any sort of contract in that language, do you look at past history with this company? Like, oh, you've let this person go and they got their bonus after the fact. So, you know, Ryan would be the same. Is that what you would look at as a lawyer?
Not necessarily, because first of all, I don't get to see that information. If other people get let go and get a bonus, most of the time they're probably settling their cases, signing right. some sort of confidentiality terms, and you know they're not allowed to talk about it. What we generally look at, John, is we look at the history of this individual. What, you know, because I can tell you that almost every single bonus plan or bonus provision within a contract I've read has some variation of this bonus is discretionary. You are not guaranteed a bonus. And, you know, it doesn't matter if it says that on paper. We, in the legal system, look at what the facts say. And, like, if oftentimes they say the bonus is discretionary, but they also say, well, to get the bonus, you have to sell a million widgets. Well, it's not discretionary if you also have a specific metric. Those are incompatible concepts.
Wow.
And the other concept here is, I mean, if you have historically gotten a bonus every year, it's very hard to say that it's not part of your compensation at a certain point.
We roll on the Thursday night edition. Employment Law Show continues, 640 Toronto.
Welcome back to the Employment Law Show.
Welcome back. You bet. 6:46 on Thursday evening. Stan Fanselberg is your guy to call the radio station right now and talk to him. Employment lawyer, of course, with the stlawyers.ca. Reach out to Stan anytime. help@employmentlawyer.ca. That's the email address we're always using. We'll roll down to our next email. Thomas is our guy. Says, guys, I had an argument with my boss because he refuses to pay us during our lunch break. Is he allowed to do that?
So technically, Thomas, what the ESA says in terms of breaks is that an employee is entitled to a half hour unpaid break for every 5 hours of work. Most people work an 8 hour day. That's how you get to an hour lunch, or sometimes a half hour lunch and 2 15-minute breaks. But, you know, unfortunately, he is right. You don't have to be paid for this. It's an unpaid break. And he's right. You're not entitled to be paid for your lunch break.
I guess it's one of those things that kind of surprises people. It's kind of like, you know, doing a move like that. Yes, the employer can do it. Is it great for morale? Maybe not. You know, they can also schedule your holidays if they want. Is that smart to do? Some would argue it's not, because it's, you know, it builds up a little bit of friction between your employer and you, even though they can say, hey, guess what? Your 5 weeks holidays, they're all going to be in February. No one does it, but they can do that legally. So there you go, Thomas. Jane is coming up next. Says, guys, my manager has made numerous inappropriate sexual comments to me. I've told him to stop and talk to HR about it, but he's the owner's brother, and they won't do anything. What can I do at this point? Crying nepotism. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no kidding, John. Yeah, Jane, I mean, firstly, that's terrible to hear. I'm sorry you're going through that. Jay, I mean, she's taken the right first steps, because the first step is always to see, can you have this dealt with internally? Because it's always important for people to understand that just because something is happening at work doesn't mean your employer is liable for it or aware of it. Because if they're not aware of it, they can't be liable. And so the first thing, and I mean, obviously, this context, it's hard to say they're not aware of it. But if you're talking about a 1,000-person company, you know, they don't know what every person's doing in every second. That's right. And so you can't make them liable until you make them aware and put an obligation on them to do something about it. And Jane's done that. Unfortunately for Jane, her company has chosen to disregard our laws and their obligations under our law. And so the next step for Jane, I mean, now she has a couple of options available to her. She can, A, go to the ministry and file a harassment complaint with the ministry, and they will come in and do an investigation, and then they will tell the employer what needs to happen. She can, B, go to the Human Rights Tribunal and file a complaint based on discrimination for sexual harassment. Okay. Or she can, C, claim constructive dismissal, claim that this is now a toxic environment, that the employer is not meeting its legal obligations, and that all of that amounts to a termination of Jane's employment and means that she's entitled to severance. Or frankly, she could do all three. It's in your, the ball is essentially in your court now, Jane, and you should definitely speak to a lawyer about your options.
Jane, a quick reminder again to reach out to Stan after the show, 1-855-821-5900. But you here now have lots of time to call us or email, but the phone number to get on air, 416-870-6400. Down to Trevor says, guys, what is the most severance that I can get if I am terminated? That's the big question.
Well, the easiest way to find out the answer to this question, Trevor, is to visit the pocketemploymentlawyer.ca. You know, you type in a few factors in terms of your age, your position, your length of employment. and you know, it'll spit out what the answer is. For you specifically, without those factors, I can't give you an answer, but I can tell you those are the factors that the courts look at, and it's somewhere between 1 and 24 months.
And you can almost guarantee that, Trevor, that you'll be a little shocked by the number. It's, you know, if you're around your buddies playing a drinking game one night, guessing severance amount, no one's going to win this one for sure. I can almost guarantee that. But again, as Stan said, man, pocketemploymentlawyer.ca to access that severance calculator. Working on down the line, Kathy Jo is up next. Says, my employer is trying to make me sign a contract for the first time in 20 years. They're saying if I don't, they will fire me, and I'm really scared and don't know what to do. That is a smart employer right there. Wow.
Yeah. So, Kathy Jo, I mean, first of all, the first thing you have to realize is you have zero obligation to sign any new contracts. You have a contract, you have a job, you have employment, and if you don't want to sign a contract based on whatever terms they're offering you, you do not have to do that.
Yeah.
At the same time, your employer does not have to continue your employment. They can, if they're saying either sign this contract or we're going to fire you, you know, it's underhanded, it's bad faith, it's malicious. You can call it what you want, but it's not technically illegal because, as we know in Ontario, you can fire anyone at any time without cause as long as the reason isn't discriminatory and as long as you give them a fair severance. And that's the key, because really what's likely happening here, John, is that they're trying to get her to sign a contract to minimize her severance in the future if they needed to fire her. And they probably don't want to fire her now because after 20 years, she's going to be owed a lot of money.
Yeah, and who knows if they talked to some other lawyer, you know, probably not an employment lawyer, and said, yeah, no way, yeah, 20-year employee, you might want to get her to sign a contract and try to nip that in the bud before it costs you too much. Now, that ship's already sailed, son. They can't do that, right?
Yeah, and one other point, actually, is important for our listeners, is that even if you do sign that contract, if they don't give you anything to sign it, if they don't give you a salary increase, more vacation, more benefits, more anything, something tangible, then that contract is not going to be enforceable because the most basic tenet of contract law is that both parties have to derive some benefit from the contract that they agree to. It's called consideration.
Yep.
And both parties have to have some kind of consideration because if you don't get anything, if you don't get any kind of consideration, that contract never came into existence, essentially.
Tanya's up next. Says, guys, my employer terminated overtime pay, made us, the employees, sign something before OT pay stopped. My question is that even legal?
Almost certainly not. You can't come to an illegal agreement. That's just the reality. You know, if I could tell my employer that I'm willing to work for $14, but you know what? Our laws won't let me make that deal because it's illegal. And just like that's illegal, if Tanya is legally owed overtime, she can't sign that away. And nor can the employer force her to sign it away.
Isn't it the case, too, that even if Tanya was so busy that and told not to do the overtime, but to get the job done, she had to do the overtime to complete the task, they still have to pay her for it, yeah?
Absolutely. I've seen so many companies with policies that say, oh, you know, we don't pay overtime and you have to get sign off on any overtime and before you you start accumulating those hours. But then they give you 80 hours of work in a week. So, you know, what is an employee realistically supposed to do? They got to do the work. And yeah. Or what are you going to say? No, I'm only going to do 40 hours of work and I guess the rest I'll throw in the garbage.
Yeah.
You know, if you got to do the work, but if it takes 80 hours to do the work, your employer's got to pay you the time it takes you to do the actual work, not the time that they want it to take or theoretically, you know, pie in the sky wish it would take.
Let's roll on down to Ike. Sent this email long, says my employer wants to get rid of my annual bonus because they're saving. They're saying they cannot afford to pay it anymore. This is a huge part of my compensation, about a third, and I cannot afford myself to lose this money. Is there anything I can do about it?
Mm-hmm. So when we're talking about bonus, and again, because so much language that employers use around bonuses, it's discretionary, not guaranteed. The first thing you kind of have to prove is that this was an integral component to which this person had an actual entitlement. And the easiest way to prove that is look at the history of their relationship. Even if the contract says, look, you're not guaranteed anything, but you get a bonus every year for 10 years and there's really not much fluctuation in it and or logic behind it, you know, it becomes a expectation. It becomes an integral part of compensation. And so once it becomes an integral part of compensation, if you are taking it away, that is arguably a constructive dismissal. And I think in this case, with the numbers we're talking about, it very clearly is a constructive dismissal. So there's no question you can do something about it, Ike. You can tell them you're not going to accept that and walk away and treat it as a termination and go and get that bonus and go and get your severance.
Let's get Doug on the line here in the last couple minutes. Go ahead, Doug. What's on your mind?
Hi, John. I just have a question. I'm not calling on my own behalf, but the person I'm calling about worked in a dental office that was absorbed by another dental office. Mm-hmm. And this person has not had a raise in 6 years. Mm-hmm. And other people in the office have all received a raise. And the reason that this person has been told is that they were overpaid to begin with when the business was absorbed. So are they under any obligation to provide a raise after any number of years?
Great question.
The short answer is no. Nobody is legally entitled to a raise. As long our laws only provide for a minimum wage, everything else above that is what you can negotiate. And if you know if this company is not giving your friend what they're worth in the open marketplace, then you know she's got to go and get it somewhere else.
Gotcha. Okay.
Thank you, bet, Doug. Thanks, pal. Any other concerns, you can always call us. It's, you know, we often look at that and we say, you know, it's kind of the same principle as, you know, they can't walk in and say, hey, we're not going to pay you anymore, but we decided to pay you less. They can't do that either. I mean, once you're there, you're beyond minimum wage. They can't change your pay structure so drastically that they're going to pay you less, right?
No, I mean, that's the most classic example of a constructive dismissal. It's, you know, it's a fundamental breach. Taking away somebody's salary is just not something. Listen, if an employee wants to agree to it, and I can give you examples during COVID when I've talked to an umpteenth number of employees who all did agree to a reduction because they understood the financial difficulties that the companies were in.
Wow.
But you don't have to agree to that, and you can treat it as a termination.
And with that, we're going to wrap it up for tonight. Appreciate the phone call, Doug. Thank you for your emails if we got to yours. If not, we'll save it for next time. And you can always move on with the chat with Stan and his team at the firm on your own time. To do that, it's 1-855-821-5900. Email help at employmentlawyer.ca. And that website, one more time, the one with the access to the severance calculator. Remember that one? Pocketemploymentlawyer.ca. We'll catch you next time right here in the Employment Law Show on 640 Toronto. Enjoy the rest of your night.